Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. So the next section actually deals with the different types of impurities and how to purify them. According to the Sharia, and again we've spoken of this in the very, very first lesson, I think, certain things are classified as pure and certain things are classified as impure. And basically it's easier to learn what's impure and assume everything else is pure. So for example, blood is considered impure, stool is considered impure, and for example, cloth is considered pure. Something that's impure can never be purified. But something that's pure, if something impure afflicts it, then it needs to be purified in order to use it. For example, if you have a piece of clothing that you're wearing and you get urine on it, then that urine needs to be removed before you can pray, because one of the requisites to praying is that your clothes be clean. This is what we mean by impurities. There are things that are inherently impure that can never be purified. And if those things come upon something pure, they make the second object temporarily impure. So what are the major impurities? This list is not completely exhaustive, because there's a lot of issues that I'm not going to go into. For example, if you're working with farm animals, and there's discussions on different types of impurities from different types of animals and how the rulings apply. But the major ones that sort of apply to us in our daily lives are, number one, blood. Number two, stool, excrement. Number three, human urine. Number four, human semen. Number five, alcohol. Number six, anything from a pig. And number seven, the saliva of a dog. So these are the major ones. And there's other ones that you can categorize in here, but these are the major ones that apply. Again, it's not exhaustive. So blood, stool, human urine, human semen, alcohol, anything from a pig, and saliva of a dog. If you look at some of these, I've put a condition, for example, human urine. And the reason why is because it really depends on the animal that you're speaking of. So if it's an edible animal, actually what you should understand before I even mention this is that in our Sharia, there are two types of najasa. There's something called najasa ghaliza and najasa khafifa. Basically, the difference between these, so there's like a heavy najasa and a light najasa. And when we say heavy najasa and light najasa, we don't mean in weight or in matter. What we mean is, within the madhab, there are some types of impurities which there was debate upon, and others which all the ulama within the madhab agreed upon. If all the ulama within the madhab, like for example Imam Muhammad, Imam Yusuf, Imam Abu Hanifa, rahmatullah alayhim, if they all agreed that something was impure, then that became a major impurity. Whereas if there was ikhtilaf among them, then that goes one step down to a minor impurity. So the seven things that I listed, those are all heavy impurities. And in reality, you barely are going to meet with something that's a minor impurity. It'd be a rare occasion. For example, the urine of an edible animal is a minor impurity. For example, the urine of a camel or the urine of a cow, that would be a minor impurity. But we don't work with those type of animals nowadays. It's very rare. So basically, if you're involved in such situations, then you can go ahead and seek a fatwa or seek more information on it. I don't want to go into details here because I'm trying to present general principles. But basically, the majority of the impurities that we face are all major or heavy impurities. So, once any of these impurities afflict clothing, if they happen to come upon your clothing or come upon your prayer rug or come upon some place in the ground that you'd like to purify, you have to then remove it through purification. And that's much of what we've been discussing, how to purify different things throughout this section on Tahara. And so here we'll talk about how you remove these impurities from either clothing or something solid. The purification process is actually based on visibility, meaning if you can see the impurity, you need to remove it, and then the thing becomes purified. And if you can't see the impurity, then you need to wash that object three times and wring it. Now, again, it will depend on the object, but it's the whole principle, if you want to have a general theme throughout all these examples, it's going to be visibility, if you can see it or not. So let's say that there is some blood on a shirt, and you want to purify that shirt. What you'll do is, you'll take the shirt, and you'll wash it one time, and all the blood goes away. There's no stain, there's no residual mark or anything. In that case, it becomes pure. It's sunnah to go ahead and wash it two more times. That's the best situation. But once you remove the visibility of the impurity, the shirt becomes pure. Now, let's say that you have some blood on your shirt, and you wash it once, and the blood goes away, but there's still a stain, then you have to wash it two more times. Even though the stain doesn't go away, three times will also purify something. So removing the impurity purifies it, whether it be once, twice, or three times, and three times is best. If the stain remains, you need to wash it three times. And when we say wash it three times, wet it, wring it. Wet it again, wring it. Wet it again, and wring it. That's what we mean by washing three times. If you have something that's invisible, let's say that there's drops of urine all over your clothing, but you can't see them, it's very difficult to pick them out, then you will go ahead and just wring it three times. You'll wash it, wring it, wash it, wring it, wash it, and the third wringing has to be a very, very tough wringing where you get all, the majority of the water out. And then that thing becomes pured. So it's purified. So if you see the impurity, removal of its athar, of its actual substance, purifies the object. If you can't see it, then you just need to wring the object three times. If it's a solid object and you can't wring it, then, or you can't squeeze it, then all you do is run water over it three times. You'll simply put it under the sink, remove it, let the last drop fall off, put it back under the water, remove it, let the last drop fall off, put it back under the water, remove it, let the last drop fall off, and that becomes pure. It really depends on what you're dealing with, but the point is, if you can see it, you need to remove it. If not, you need to wash it three times, such that in your heart you become confident that the impurity probably is removed. Also, if you have a solid object and you can scratch away the impurity, that's fine as well. So let's say there's some impurity here. You rub it on the ground, the impurity disappears. This is now pure. If you have, for example, semen dried on your clothing and you scratch it away and it's gone, then the impurity is gone. So that's how we deal with impurities within the Sharia. The Sharia actually overlooks, depending on the amount of the impurity, the Sharia may or may not overlook it when you not necessarily overlook it, but exempt you in certain cases when you have to pray a salah. So, for example, if you have blood, and that blood is on your clothing, let me say one more thing about blood before we move on. If the blood is less than the amount that would break your wudu, then that is not considered impure. Okay? If the blood is less than the amount that would break your wudu, it's not considered impure. If it didn't break your wudu, for example, you have a cut on your hand, it's a paper cut, and you put your clothing on top of it, and then you get this thin line of blood on your shirt, and then there's still no blood flowing from the wound, that thin line of blood on your shirt is not impure. It has to be able to be the amount that can break the wudu to actually be considered an impurity. Now, the Sharia overlooks the size of a dirham, or a dirham is about a 50-cent piece. So the Sharia overlooks the size of a 50-cent piece in order for you to pray should you have impurity on your clothing. This is based on the fact that during the time of the Prophet ﷺ, it was permitted to clean oneself with stones when using the washroom. So there were three ways in which people would clean themselves. One was water, two was stones, and three was water and stones. So if somebody cleans themselves with just stones, you can imagine that just from the area, this round area where the actual impurity exited, the stool, there would be molecules of impurity all around that area unless you washed it. So that much is overlooked by the Sharia. And you can go ahead and pray with that. If you know you have it on you, it's still makruh, but your prayer will count. So if I have like a little circle of blood here, and I have no way of cleaning it, and I go ahead and pray, then my prayer still counts. Let's say it's like the size of a dime. Or I'm praying in the Jama'ah, I finish my prayer, and as I turn to do salam, I notice that there's a circle of blood on my shirt. If it's less than a 50-cent piece, your prayer counts. So the Sharia will overlook that. But if you knew it was there before you prayed, it will be makruh, disliked, to pray with it, and it's still better to purify it. That's the sort of border of how much the Sharia will accept before your clothing becomes useless for salah, and then you'll have to purify. Or if it was greater than a 50-cent piece, you would have to go back, purify your clothing, and then come back and then pray, because one of the prerequisites for prayer is pure clothing. In the case of urine of edible animals, 1/4 of a piece of cloth is overlooked. I mean, this is not going to apply to us because none of us work on a farm, but if you did, or you happen to be like avid in horseback riding or something, and your shirt gets afflicted with, you know, the urine of an edible animal, let's say on a farm somewhere, then 1/4 of the cloth is overlooked. So 1/4 means, when we say that, I just want to talk about this very briefly, because if you read books of fiqh, it's often mentioned. When we say 1/4 of a piece of cloth, we don't mean the whole thobe. It means one piece of the cloth that was put together with. So for example, this sleeve is one piece. If you ever see how they make these shirts, this whole thing is one piece, this sleeve. And this front is one piece, the back is one piece, and the other sleeve is one piece. So should 1/4 of this piece become afflicted with an impurity, which is light, like the urine of edible animals, then and only then will the Sharia say your salah did not count. It'd still be makruh to pray with even a drop of urine if you knew it was there. But as far as the salah counting, it will count with if it's less than 1/4 of this of a piece of cloth. Now, we got to remember one thing is that the Sharia does not become, the Sharia is not molecular in these type of issues, and we tend to think very molecular because we have scientific backgrounds. In the sense that if there's molecules of impurity there, the Sharia overlooks them very, very often. For example, in the case of drops, mists of urine. So you're actually going to the washroom and there's some like pin-sized drops of urine that come on your clothing, let's say while you're using the washroom. The Sharia completely overlooks those because those are very, very difficult and it becomes a haraj. So the Sharia does not get into those pin-sized drops. You have to clearly see that there's some impurity on you. Similarly, let's say that you're sleeping in an impure cloth. So there's a piece of cloth, let's say that it happens to be impure. And while you're sleeping, you sweat. And now your body became moist, right? The cloth was dry, your body became moist, and so that moisture can allow transferring of the impurity on the cloth to your body. But until and unless you either see or taste, either see or smell that impurity on your body remains pure, meaning the skin of your body remains pure. So the Sharia doesn't say, okay, some molecules might have transferred. Obviously, some molecules should have transferred, so therefore it's impure. It looks at the visibility of the issue. Now, that's the fatwa. You know, we talked about fatwa and taqwa a few days ago, one of the evening sessions. That's the fatwa, but it's taqwa to try to remove as much as you can. So if you remember the hadith, إِذَا اسْتَيْقَظَ أَحَدُكُمْ مِنْ مَنَامِهِ, that when one of you wakes up from your sleep, فَلْيَغْسِلْ يَدَهُ ثَلَاثًا, that he should wash his hands three times. Why? Because he doesn't know, فَإِنَّهُ لَا يَدْرِي أَيْنَ بَاتَتْ يَدَهُ, because he doesn't know where his hand slept. So in that case, there was a possibility of molecules of impurity being on your hand, so the Prophet ﷺ advised us to wash our hands beforehand. That's taqwa, that's not fatwa. Right? So that's taqwa. That's something extra you can do. If you come to me and say, I did not wash my hands before I performed the wudu, your wudu still counts. It's only sunnah to wash your hands before you begin the wudu. Even though there's a command in this hadith, so we consider that taqwa. So it's taqwa to avoid as much as you can, but the fatwa is you don't just sit there and start getting nitpicky on all these, every possible molecule of impurity that could be on you. Now, we need to keep all that in mind and then realize that we should be very, very careful about certain aspects in our daily lives. For example, we should be very careful how we treat the bathroom. It's very, very, it's actually a very dangerous place to enter because there's impurity all over the place, especially in a public bathroom. Now, most people in a public bathroom, they don't wash their hands after they use the bathroom. So they'll use the washroom and then they'll go grab the door handle. Right, so they've touched the door handle and the door handle is now impure. You cannot see the actual urine, but you still have to be careful because you know it's there. You know how people treat the bathrooms in this country. So when you go, and so what happens is now all day people have been using the washroom and all day they're grabbing the door and polluting the door handle. And then what happens is you go and you make wudu, right, in the washroom, some public washroom, and then you have wet hands and you grab the door handle. So now you have moist hands and you've touched the dry door handle, but you've opened the possibility to transfer impurity onto your hands. And sometimes you can even smell it on your hands. That's how bad it is. So you have to be very, very careful. Although the Sharia would not blame you if you didn't see any effect, it's still something that we need to be careful of. And you know, what I do is once I perform the wudu, I grab one more piece of paper towel and I use that to open the door handle. I wouldn't even touch it. And similarly, when you're making wudu in the washroom, you need to be very careful of how you treat the sink, because now some people who do wash their hands, they just go and grab the sink. Nowadays we're lucky because they have those new detectors, so you don't need to worry as much, but a lot of sinks don't. So what happens is somebody uses a washroom, they grab the handle. So they grab the handle to turn the sink on, and then they wash their hands, and then they close it. So there can be potential impurity on the handle. Then what happens is later on you perform wudu, you touch the handle again, you perform wudu, you've totally purified yourself, and then you shut it off with a wet hand. And so now you've got impurities on your hand. And now it may not be visible, so the Sharia may overlook it, but it's part of taqwa, it's part of your purification to think about these issues and be a little bit careful about how you treat the public restroom. Similarly in our homes, sometimes we're not very careful in our homes. So for example, especially with little kids, sometimes they tend to leave bits of impurity, lying around. Like, for example, in the washroom, They'll touch the door handle without thinking about what's going on. They're not, you know, they're young. They're excused, and they don't know how to properly purify themselves. And so a lot of times there's potential for spreading impurity all over the place. Now look at our bathroom. I've been watching this the whole last 10 days. These kids, they come in here, they don't wear slippers into the washroom. So they got their socks on. And then they walk all over the washroom. Like they go use the washroom, their whole socks are wet, and they're stepping in everything in that washroom on the floor. That floor, it's got to be impure. And then they start walking, and they walk into the masjid with wet socks. And then they're just walking all over the place there. So yeah, we have to be very, very careful. What's nice about this masjid is the first few steps is an area where we don't pray. So if you notice that, you know, before by the door, there's a little brown carpet before that. So as if they did have any impurity, we would hope that would be picked up by the initial carpet there, which is a place where nobody prays anyway. You got to be careful about these things and think about these things, especially in your own homes. That's why it's highly recommended that within our homes we keep a separate prayer rug. A separate prayer rug that you pray upon that should be put away when you're not praying. Now people like to leave their prayer rug out. I mean, you're opening the possibility for that prayer rug to become impure, because what will happen is your kids run around and then perhaps they step on it, or they don't purify themselves properly after using the washroom and they touch it or play on it. And that's really an essential place for you, because you need your area of prayer to be pure. So we should be very, very careful about folding our prayer rugs and putting them away when we're not using them. So taking them out and putting them away for the sake of prayer, because you want to guarantee yourself that the ground is pure. That's one of the mandatory prerequisites of praying, that your prayer area be pure. So that's why you'll see, like, especially in the subcontinent, people put a big emphasis on folding their prayer rug. The point is, really, it's to protect that prayer area. You should guard that prayer area and make sure that you don't open the chance of impurities afflicting it. So we should be careful with our prayer rugs. We should keep prayer rugs, use them for the prayer, and also fold them and put them away when you're done praying, given the fact that in this day and age, many people have no idea about these masail, about tahara. I mean, people think Clorox equals tahara. It doesn't. Just because you use some nice cleanser and the whole place smells beautiful, it could be completely polluted with impurities and you wouldn't even know it. So we have to be very, very careful to, one, learn about these issues, and it's a very complicated and deep issue. I've just presented a very, very brief overview. And two, to create as many barriers as possible to impurity. So by using a prayer rug, by grabbing the door handle with a paper towel. Whenever I perform wudu, when I go to a public washroom, the first thing I do is turn the faucet on. I take water and pour it over both handles. That's the first thing, to make sure that area is clean. I clean the sink a little bit, and then I use the sink. Just because you never know. You never know what you might touch on there. The other thing to keep in mind is that, especially for the washrooms, is that you should try to keep a pair of slippers in the washroom, which is so that your feet don't have to touch the ground in the washroom. This is actually sunnah, to have slippers for the washroom. And it allows you, again, it creates one more barrier of protection. So those of us who use the washroom here in the masjid, when we put slippers on and we go into the washroom and we take them off, even if our feet are wet from the wudu, we end up stepping on the carpet, but we haven't touched the floor of the washroom with our feet. Whereas the kids, a lot of them don't want to put the slippers on. They run in with their socks. So that's why the slippers are especially important in the washroom. There's a couple common things that might be asked in this particular section. One is, for example, how do you purify the floor? Because you can't wring that, and that's a very common, for example, the bathroom floor. What's the proper way to purify it? And really the best way is that first you wipe away any impurity. So sort of with a slightly damp cloth, you wipe away the whole bathroom floor and wipe away any visible impurity. So that's the first step. And then the second step is that you take a wet cloth and you wring it. So you'll wash an area, and then you'll wring it, and if you see no impurity come out in the wringing, then you know that that's pure, because you don't see any effect of any impurity. And at the end, you can do Lysol and all these other things, but that doesn't necessarily make it pure. It makes it clean. And we talked about the difference between purity and cleanliness. The other thing is carpet. A lot of people ask the question about carpet, because now carpet's tacked down to the ground. So how are you going to purify carpet? Well, there's a couple ways. One is, if you have an object that you can't remove, like a mat or a bed, you can simply just pour water over it 3 times. Now, it's difficult to get water to flow on this, and the problem with carpet is when you make water flow, you just push the water further down the carpet, so you're just spreading the impurity all over the place. So what you should do is, if you know there's some impurity, for example, you have a child, the child vomits on the carpet, and now you need to clean that vomit, what you do is first pick up all visible signs of impurity. So take a wet rag and begin to clean just that area and remove as much impurity as you can with the wet rag. Once you remove that impurity, then you can pour a little bit of water over it, take another rag and wipe over it, and then squeeze that rag into the bucket, and you'll see a lot of other stuff come out, and you'll be able to tell that that's impurity as well. And you keep doing that until you can no longer transfer anything from the carpet to the rag, to the clean rag, and then you'll know that you've picked up most of it. That's one way. The second way is to get these carpet cleaning machines, because they run a flow of water over the area. And remember that flowing water has the ability to pick up impurity. Flowing water is one of the types of water that you can use, which is a very good source of cleaning, for example, in the washing machine as well. So if you run that machine over it a few times, then that should actually work as a good way to purify the carpet. As long as you remove the athar, the visibility and the smell as much as you can from that area, then that will make the carpet pure. But one thing you don't want to do is, if it's just loaded with vomit, you don't want to just throw water on it, because then you're just going to spread it all over the place. You want to first pick up the impurity and then begin to purify that area. So those are the major issues regarding impurities. There's one more thing that we should realize about purification, and that is, at least purification of substances, and that is skin of animals. How do you purify the skin of an animal? And actually the ground. So let's talk about the ground first. If you have an area of ground that, for example, let's say that a dog happened to urinate on an area of ground. In that case, the ground becomes pure with the sun. So the heat of the sun purifies that ground. Once that area dries, then it becomes pure. So you can go ahead and pray on it, but you cannot use it for tayammum. So that area which has an impurity over it, which subsequently dried by the heat of the sun, can be used to pray upon, but cannot be used for tayammum. So in the case of the ground, the heat of the sun purifies it. As far as the skin of animals is concerned, the skin of animals is a big issue, because I don't know how often you reflect on this, but we wear skin of animals all the time. For example, if you have a leather bag, leather backpack, leather shoes, all that is from animals. So when was the last time whether you asked whether those animals are dhabiha or not? Most of them probably are not, because they just come from any old processing plant. They're just average animals. So how is the skin of an animal purified? Well, there's two ways. The first is, if you do the dhabiha of an animal, it automatically purifies that animal, the skin of that animal. So when you do the dhabiha, not only is the meat pure, but everything of the animal becomes pure, including the skin. So if you have a cow, for example, that was slaughtered properly, its skin becomes pure. The second way that you can purify skin is by tanning. If there's a tanning process, then that purifies the skin. So that is why, if you have a leather jacket or if you have a leather backpack, it's permissible to use that, because it's been tanned. And tanning purifies skin according to the Sharia. So this is why we're allowed to use leather backpacks, for example. Remember that an impure animal can never become pure. So if you have pig, you can never purify the pig. No matter even if you do the dhabiha, the skin does not become pure. If you tan it, the skin will not become pure. Impure animals can never become pure. And the final thing to keep in mind is that you should remember that all these types of impurity, they have a huge effect on your salah and a huge effect on the experience of your salah. Because what are we doing? When we're talking about all this purification, why are we discussing all this? Only because of salah. Because in salah, you have to purify your body with wudu or ghusl. You have to purify your clothing. You have to purify your prayer area. So all of these, essentially, the whole discussion that we're dealing with is only as a preparation for salah. So these things are like poison. Just as if you take poison, if somebody gives you poison with a good intention, if you eat poison and you didn't intend to die, you're still going to experience harm from that poison. In the same way, these are poisons for us. Whether you intend it or not, if you're not careful about these things, they can hurt you. And they can hurt the effect, the spiritual effect of your salah. So we want to be especially careful when we're dealing with these issues. Especially because nowadays, you know, there's impurity all over the place, especially in public bathrooms. So keep all that in mind. Now, the very last chapter, well, are there any questions on this section?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Like this area here, one corner becomes polluted, say, urine or something, you know, the whole area is...
Okay, so that's actually a good question. So if you have one huge rug, like this is a huge rug in this prayer area, it's all one piece. So if one corner becomes polluted, is the whole thing not usable? And the answer is no. Only that corner is not usable. So if you have a big rug and a corner becomes polluted, you can use any other area of the rug that is not polluted, and it's fine.